Stunned silence.
What is this?
We're doing a little bit
of a show. So must be doing something. Right?
And it's playing,
Tell us what you mean.
I just can't think of it.
I love the enthusiasm.
Cool.
You're tuned to the 15th Station, New Zealand's first Catholic podcast. This is episode 127 for May 2018. I'm your host, James, and in the virtual rendition studios tonight, we always have Gavin. How are you, Gavin?
Good, thanks, James. I was practicing that when we were doing the sound check beforehand.
You were.
New Zealand's first Catholic podcast, because I never get to say it. You always get to say it, so I'm a bit jealous.
Well, fair enough, too, because, you know...
Good to talk to you, James.
That's about the level of value that I add, to be honest, is emphasising first Catholic podcast.
First.
But someone who adds far more value than that is Anna. How are you, Anna?
I am well, thanks, James, and you're too kind.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. Always good to talk to both of you. You both well? Everything going well over there in Australia?
Pretty good. Had an absolute stunner of a day today.
Yeah.
So life is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's cold.
It is starting to get a bit chilly, a bit nippy. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's all right. That's, you know, it's winter. We had the longest summer in the history of summers.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think we might talk about that a little bit later, actually, about such things like weather. But, yeah. But no, it's certainly... Autumn has well and truly arrived.
Yes,
you would expect.
You would hope so, given that we're nearly into...
I think it's half over.
Nearly into June, I was going to say.
Better in winter, yeah.
Better late than never, but, you know, they'll be bringing in all the and the sheep down the country, bringing in all the sheep because it's getting a bit cold. Maybe they need a new shepherd. But how about our first story is talking about that. This is from the Otago Daily Times. As a Southland farm boy, Michael Dooley used to stand shepherd's crook in hand, watching his father's flock. Last night, there was not a swan dry or pair of gumboots in sight, but Bishop Michael Dooley once more watched over his father's flock. That's very poetic, Otago Daily Times, I have to say. This wasn't obviously last night, but anyway. On stage in the Dunedin Town Hall, newly ordained as Catholic Bishop of Dunedin, and with a staff replacing the crook, Bishop Dooley told the 1,000-strong congregation he felt a long way away from Hidden Bush. When I left school, I did an apprenticeship in engineering, he said, so entering a seminary wasn't something that was expected. I had trust that was God's will for me. Bishop Dooley is the seventh man to be ordained Bishop of Dunedin and said he was thankful his predecessor would still be around to aid him. The new role had given him some sleepless nights, including much debate over what motto to put on his new coat of arms, Bishop Dooley said. It was a source of great anxiety to me, but one night I woke up, got up and wrote it down. Trust in God, he said. That has been a theme of my life, and it will be as I take on the privilege of leading this diocese in the shepherding role as bishop. So, Bishop Dooley, the new Bishop of Dunedin. Gavin, always good to welcome a new bishop to the flock. Hang on, wait a minute. They head the flock. It's always good to welcome a new bishop to head the flock in Dunedin. What do we know about Bishop Dooley?
Well, I think Anna knows a bit more about him, but I think it's two episodes in a row we've had a new bishop, because I think the new bishop of Christchurch was installed. It might have been two episodes ago we spoke about it, but certainly this is the second bishop. So the two dioceses that cover the South Island, asterisk, some of Wellington goes into the South Island, but the two main dioceses in the South Island have both got new bishops in the last couple of months. So one in Christchurch, listeners might recall Bishop Barry Jones passed away a couple of years ago. Whereas this one was the retirement of Bishop Colin Campbell. So great news for that. It's interesting that you sort of talk about bishops and leading their sheep, or it might be. It's interesting. I was at a meeting recently at which a number of bishops were present, and there was a discussion around the fact that sometimes bishops find themselves in different places relative to their flock. So sometimes they're leading them, sometimes they're sort of walking behind them to help them into the right direction. Sometimes they're heading off to find the lost sheep and help bring them back into the fold. So bishops sometimes do take different positions relative to their sheep, and I think that's important. But certainly leading is one of the important positions they should take, and I mean, it's always, I think there's something special about bishops who are ordained for their home diocese and where they grew up. It's not always the case, and it's not always possible that it's the case. But I think there's a certain specialness about it when local boys make good, I guess, to use that overused phrase. So, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for the Bishop of Dunedin to come in and plot a new course for the diocese or continue the current course.
Indeed. So, from shepherds to navigators, and see how many other metaphors we can bring in. Anna, do you know Bishop Dooley very well, or do you know much about him?
I sort of had contact with him over a period of regular contact with him over a period of a couple of years when I was teaching at Good Shepherd, and he's a very sincere, gentle man, and yes, I can totally imagine him sort of, you know, epitomizing that idea of the shepherd, sort of quiet, thoughtful, reflective, kind of person. And yeah, I'm just happy for Dunedin Diocese. I mean, I guess the church down there is struggling in many different ways, and I think sort of communities down there are struggling. They're very small communities, and life can be, you know, like pretty tough out on the farms and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think he's got quite a job ahead of him. But he's young and youngish for a bishop, you know. So, yeah, I reckon he'll be good. And I think people will like him a lot. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we wish him all the very, very best and pray for him, obviously, and pray for his ministry ahead of him. And you're right, Gavin, it's only, you know, three episodes and two bishops. Let's see what happens in next month's episode, I guess.
I was just about to say something, but I'm not gonna tempt fate.
No, probably not. No, not a good idea. So we'll cross across the Tasman to a story about a different bishop. This is from The Age. Cardinal George Pell, who's obviously a bishop as well, will be the most senior Catholic leader to face a jury after being committed to stand trial on multiple historic sexual assault charges. In a decision that will ring loud through the Vatican and around the religious world, Australia's most senior Catholic and the man who a year ago oversaw management of the Vatican's finances was committed to stand trial on half the charges he faced, involving multiple accusers. However, Magistrate Belinda Wallington struck out a series of serious charges at the start of her ruling, finding there was insufficient evidence for him to be convicted by a jury. Ms. Wallington committed the 76-year-old on charges against multiple complainants, involving alleged sexual offending at a swimming pool in the 1970s in Ballarat, when the accused man was then working as a priest, and at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne in 1990s, when he was then the then Archbishop of Melbourne. Asked to enter a plea, Cardinal Pell said in a loud, clear voice, "Not guilty." Well, we've talked a little bit about this, and we don't really have a lot more to talk about it. But it is quite, you know, it is obviously news, especially this part of the world. Is this the only cardinal, actually? I think, well, obviously saying it's the most senior Catholic leader to face a jury. And what do we make of this? I mean, so the His Eminence is saying he's innocent. He's claiming he's innocent, and I mean, there was towards the end of the article, there was a statement from his lawyers who said Cardinal George Pell has at all times fully cooperated with Victoria Police and always and steadfastly maintains his innocence. He has voluntarily returned to Australia to meet those accusations. He will defend the remaining charges. He would like to thank all of those who have supported him from there in Australia. What do you make of all of this?
It's it is what it is, right? Like he's going to have to stand trial, and we gathered that was going to happen, and I guess they've now narrowed down the particular offences they're going to charge him with, and so now it can happen. In some ways, I hope it's that they don't draw it out too long, because it must be terribly stressful, and he's not a young man either, and not a healthy man either. So I hope that, you know, this is not taking too much of a toll on him, just the whole process, and you know, difficulties. I mean, I guess he's facing jail, perhaps. I'm not sure what, because the charges, the lesser charges are the one, like, I don't know what kind of, what do you call it? Sentencing would be, yeah, would is for these, it was interesting.
What's the time
frame
here?
Reading
another,
it was, I think, from a Catholic publication, sort of basically saying, oh, you know, this is a really good thing that the church hasn't put up a fight to try and protect Pell from these accusations and from facing a trial. And, you know, it's about time that the church has done that. And maybe the fact that the Vatican hasn't put up a fight means that maybe he's a bit guilty. And first of all, I just thought, oh, well, that's a pretty, you know, big call to make. But also, I think, like, Pell has willingly come back to Australia to face the charges. And I very well could be that he said, I'm going to face them. So, you know, don't, you know, just let me do what I need to do. And, you know, you don't have to get on the bandwagon for me. And, you know, he wasn't going to hide behind, you know, being in the Vatican and doing his work there. He chose to face it. It wasn't like he was dragged back, you know. So, in fact, he is doing what bishops should do, by, you know, standing up and facing, you know, what it is that comes. He's being a good shepherd, right? And I don't know whether he's guilty of those things or not. That's not for me to decide. So, yeah, but I believe he probably needs a lot of prayer, and because it's probably it is a difficult time for him. So
it's tricky, isn't it? And I mean, Gavin, it's one of those things where, you know, you look at the amount of coverage and everything, and obviously given his seniority in the church, if he is innocent, and I mean, you know, we still run with the principle of innocent till proven guilty. If he is innocent, it's going to be very hard for him to get a fair trial and to clear his name at the end of it. If he is guilty, then the sooner either which way you go, I'm with Anna on getting a verdict as quickly and as justly as possible. If he is guilty, it'll have massive ramifications for the church in Oceania. If he is innocent, then really there should be some looking into the process that sort of got to this point. What's your sort of thoughts, particularly given that some of the charges have been thrown out pre-trial?
It's an interesting situation, obviously, all around. So, there are a lot of questions that that were raised during the course of the hearing to determine whether he would stand trial, including the way that the Victorian police handled their investigation. There are some quite interesting is probably the best way to describe it, tactics that were used, including opening an investigation into the cardinal before there was anyone who had complained, which is a fairly unusual tactic in investigation, as it was described by the cardinal's lawyers. In a sense, there are many people or systems on trial. Clearly, the cardinal is the person who's most on trial, but the process that the Victorian police went through, the process that the courts are going through, the whole question around a jury of your peers and an impartial jury and prejudicial evidence that may have been published, including a book that was published shortly before the cardinal was charged and then removed from Victorian bookshelves because of the possibility of tainting the minds of potential jurors. So there are many, many things at play, but I would share the sentiments you've both offered in terms of timeliness for the cardinal, for those who have, excuse me, made those accusations. And as you said, James, quickly but justly and fairly and methodically. For all involved, there should be no stone unturned in trying to seek justice, whatever that looks like in a case like this. And clearly, if the Cardinal were to be found guilty, and based on his commentary, we can't really say whether he might appeal or whatever might happen, or similarly, if he was found not guilty, whether there'd be other things that might follow. But I think the sooner that there can be some sense of justice for everyone involved, the better. So,
agreed. It's one of those things where you wish that that this wasn't happening, because you wish that there had been no one who had been abused and therefore had no case to bring. But it'll be interesting to follow. I agree. I mean, we talked briefly previously when the case was first brought, that there did seem to be, and I can already hear, if people were listening to this podcast and they're not fans of Cardinal Pell because he is a polarizing figure, they'd go, oh, James, you're just a big fanboy of Cardinal Pell, so you're saying there's nothing he can do, no wrong. Let me be 100% clear. If he's guilty of these crimes, and that's exactly what they are, abhorrent crimes, to actually use his own words, then he deserves the full force of the law and to be brought down upon him. And if that means jail time or whatever is required, I'm not one who says that priests or bishops, or in this case cardinals, should be excused in any way for involvement in what is the worst of, the worst in my opinion. But that being said, the approach to give it its true... to have probity in the process, to have reliability in the process, you've got to follow due process for a reason. And I'll be saying the same thing if in a few months' time, or
not clear yet. We may know that by the end of the week,
right?
Some dates, yeah.
Well, whenever the actual case is, I'll come back and mark this date. I still say the same thing, regardless of the outcome. The important point is that justice is served, and there's not a point of having an agenda being served here, and like you say, announcing an investigation and going, anyone will come forward. Well, we'll see. It could be worse. It couldn't be worse. Sorry if it's guilty, but moving to another area of the world. This is from the Union of Catholic Asian News. Sister Patricia Fox, the Australian nun whose missionary visa was revoked by the Philippine government last month, has debunked allegations against her by the Bureau of Immigration in a 25-page document. The nun, who has been living in the Philippines for 27 years as a missionary, said the government has no right to define and delimit the scope of our missionary and apostolate works. Lawyer Sister Fox's legal counsel.
I gave you Michael Dooley.
Yeah, well, that's better. Sister Fox's legal counsel said that the attempt to dilute the interpretation of the nun's religious vocation violates the country's laws that guarantee the free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession and worship. The nun's affidavit noted that authorities made a sweeping and erroneous assumption of facts and law when they ordered her arrest and the eventual revocation of her missionary visa. The 71-year-old nun said that the Bureau should have consulted a religious person, such as a bishop or a priest, to understand better as to what, as a whole, constitutes missionary and apostolic work. The Bureau cited the nun's attendance at protest rallies of farmers and workers demanding justice from the government. Authorities said the nun's action constituted a violation of the conditions of her visa not to get involved in partisan politics. The nun said the government should understand the religious congregation's charism to realize that she was not partisan. Our charism is not defined by activity alone, nor is it limited to a specific task. Wherever we are, we must become involved in the situation in which we live, she said. Gavin, what do we make of this? This Sister Fox getting in trouble in the Philippines?
Well, yeah, it was big news here in Australia over several days as it went back and forth, and who was involved, and the President Duterte, I think eventually admitted that he was a big part of seeking the visa's revocation. So it's a fascinating story. It's funny how people on different sides of political spectrums can accuse the church of being partisan on some issues, and then they sort of ignore the fact that when they're on their side, that's not partisan. When they're on our side, when they're against us, they're partisan, and often on different issues they're either on side or off side because of the church's reliance on the gospel and the teaching tradition of the church, which doesn't fit in any political system really. and therefore oscillates between various parties depending on the particular issue. So, there are clearly, without getting into all of the extrajudicial things that Duterte's up to and the way that he's choosing to respond to dissenting voices, just looking at this case, it's not quite a parallel with when President Obama appeared to be sort of trying to bring all of his power onto the Little Sisters of the Poor, but to have the president of the Philippines seemingly trying to exercise all of his power on a religious sister from Australia because he doesn't like what she says, in a country in which the president often doesn't, it's not a good look, the things he gets up to. This just adds to the evidence of not a good look, president.
I was going to say, it has to be one of the great understatements of the podcast episode so far. For a president, for
only 127,
not a good look, not a good look. Yes, he gets such as not a good look.
Yeah, and there is a an important role that religious women and men, priests and lay Catholics can play in speaking, speaking truth to power, to use that phrase. And so, I don't know all of the ins and outs of the case, but it seems a bit like, good on you, sister, from what I've read so far.
Yes, well, it's one of those things. I like your point around, partisan and not partisan until I disagree with you, then it's totally partisan. Anna, what did you make of this, of her getting her visa revoked?
Yeah, well, I haven't, this is the first time I've come across the story. I must have missed it over here. But I guess, this is the thing, when you are in a country at the whim of the country's laws and whoever happens to be in power, like a visa doesn't necessarily, perhaps it gives you certain rights, but it is kind of like a there's no right to have a visa in a certain country, and whether you're standing up for the downtrodden and all that kind of stuff, which I'm sure that's what she's doing. But I guess, unfortunately, countries governments use their power to get rid of people that they don't have to keep in their country, right? So, good on her for fighting back and just not accepting it. And it does sound like this guy, he's obviously not, he's bad news maybe. And so it's good to keep fighting against sort of what's not just and things like that. But that's kind of the, when you're only there on a visa, like whatever kind of visa it is, right? Like you really are at the mercy of the government, because they're the ones who are allowing you to be there. So if they feel that you've broken your visa conditions, well, rightly or wrongly,
you're out.
Anyway,
you're done.
I
do think it's one of those things in terms of the checking out the charism of the nun and getting involved with the protests and things like that. It is one of those things where what nuns are known for nowadays versus what they've been known for in the past has changed quite a bit. But that being said, the disagreeing with the government and suddenly you're out does feel like not that, what's that? Oh, it's not democracy, that's right. Maybe it's a bit more sort of ideological. Speaking of which, from the Catholic...
Oh, sorry.
No, you go. Ruin my perfect segue, that, but you go on.
I'm so sorry about that. But, I was just remember the Dominican priest in New Zealand who went into... Was it the American embassy?
The American embassy and the pig's blood, or the Waihapai spy towers, or
that's right. They did a whole lot of things that ended up being sort of criminal.
Yeah.
But against something that they thought was unjust and all that kind of stuff, and they're making a stand. Now, I don't know what, like, I just like, is that the role of religious? And perhaps the different religious groups are formed for different, you know, the different charisms, or, you know, they have their particular mode. But perhaps what she's doing by getting in trouble with the government means that she's perhaps not helping the situation. I don't know, but it's, that was another thing that crossed my mind with this as well. Is that perhaps maybe there are some areas where they still help the people, but they're not activists themselves. I don't know. But anyway, as you were, segue. Begin.
Yeah. Well, no, you've ruined that now. No. Yeah, I think it's that question of, yeah, the point of diminishing returns, I guess, that, you know, at what point does your activism hinder your effectiveness, I guess.
Yeah.
And are there platforms on which you can speak that are more useful than by doing things in the background? And yeah, it's a difficult call often, I suspect. So...
I mean,
it'll be interesting. We'll see what happens.
It will be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I think that it's always good to sort of see people wherever they are and whatever their jobs are, finding ways to, you know, stand up for the little person and, you know, battle against evil and hatred wherever they see it. Speaking of battling against hatred, from the Catholic leader, human rights, climate change, and environmental protection have topped the agenda as Australian bishops join more than 70 bishops from across Oceania for meetings in Port Moresby from April the 11th to the 18th. In a keynote address to the Federation of the Catholic Bishops Conferences of Oceania, held every 4 years, Holy See Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin challenged the Church to identify and promote true alternatives to harmful ways of life that prevailed in society. Cardinal Parolin shared his reflection on Laudato Si, the second encyclical of Pope Francis, and called on bishops to fight the ideology of individualism that harmed people and the environment. Individualism, of course, has very deep roots coming from the times of the Enlightenment, in which encouraged a separation from each other, he said. A separation from community brings us towards other means of individual and independent living. The Assembly of FCBCO, catchy, is a meeting of four bishops' conferences of Australia, New Zealand, the Pacific Islands, and Papua New Guinea, and the Solomon Islands. Under the theme, Care for Our Common Home of Oceania, a Sea of Possibilities, see what they did there, the FCBCO studied the environmental and social challenges they were facing and tried to find concrete solutions to the needs across the Pacific region. Concerns included the care of the ocean ecosystem, the protection of human rights and the environment, threatened by an economy of intense exploitation of this vast geographical area. Mm. Well, what do we think about those being top of the agenda there, Anna? It's, I mean, there's a lot of protection of human rights and the environment, threatening the economy, intense exploitation. If I was channeling Don or some of the others who have been on the podcast in the past, there might be some commentary about a distinct lack of spiritual concerns there and more human ones. Not saying they're not important too.
No, well, yeah, perhaps that was something that occurred to me in looking at that, but. I mean, perhaps that, you know, obviously every time they meet, they have maybe a particular theme or areas of discussion. So, you know, over the years, they cover lots of different things, right? So,
true. Good point.
I mean, maybe. But yeah, I mean, yeah, as you say, these things are still important to talk about. And I would have thought... Yeah, the whole idea of the various ideologies, political ones that are around at the moment, like they're really threatening to the faith and the public nature of our faith and things like that. So hopefully they talked about those kinds of things as well. But yeah, it's an interesting, I mean, I think it's a really good idea that these conferences are, like, get together on a regular basis, and that there is sort of some collaboration with sort of probably the big picture projects and things like that are happening. And certainly New Zealand and Australia being perhaps the more sort of wealthy conferences and things like that. And perhaps, and the more condensed, well, actually Australia is probably not really that condensed, but giving help to those in the Pacific as well is a good thing. So,
Gavin, what did you think? Did you have much of a say setting the agenda for what they were going to cover off?
I didn't. In a different world, I might have actually been there, but due to other travel commitments, I wasn't able to travel to Port Moresby. I crossed some things off my bucket list recently. Port Moresby would not have been on my list of of things that were on that. But I'm not 100% sure of when the sort of theme for the conference was set, whether there was a long time coming with this theme. But we can, I think for many countries, particularly those in Polynesia and Micronesia and those parts of the world, like this is a genuine life or death sort of situation for them, right? This issue. In terms of what's happening with sea levels, and you can always put aside the question of what's causing it and just say what we do know is that in many places sea levels are rising, and somewhere like Kiribati, for example, I think it's just a matter of time in Tuvalu and Niue and some of these places on current trajectories that their countries will be underwater in some, you know, several years or, you know, a decade and a half type thing. So the diversity of the conference or the federation of conferences is such that the issues could cover any number of topics, and certainly the conference over several days would have covered a lot of territory. This is one of the stories that emerged from it. And from, I've spoken to several bishops who were there, who talked about what a remarkable few days it was, having a chance to engage with the faithful of Papua New Guinea, going out to parishes and celebrating masses and excuse me, and that sort of thing. So there's sort of there are many layers to a gathering of this type, and I think the topics covered would have gone far beyond this, but trying to look through the lens of a bishop from Pacific Island countries as opposed to the bishop of, say, Auckland or Melbourne, how those the different priorities that might be faced there. But certainly things like vocations to the priesthood, right? Big issue in these places. No doubt, you know, Papua New Guinea, I think, is one where they've talked about the possibility of having a viri probati, so married men of older age, whether they might be ordained to help with the priestly shortages there and various other things. So I suspect we've covered just a slice of what was discussed in a wide-ranging conference, but it's, you know, it's worth reflecting on how such priorities are come to, and how we can make sure that the church in this part of the world, small as it is on the international scale and numerically, but we think it's pretty cool and pretty important.
Pretty cool and pretty important. Well, I hope that some of the concrete solutions that they were looking to come up to some of those issues start to see the light of day, especially if the Holy Spirit was moving through the conference, which I'm sure he was.
Hope someone wrote them down.
Well, you would think so. Well, if they're concrete, maybe they etched them in stone. This is our last one from Fox 10 News Indiana. Yes, that's right. Fox 10 News Indiana. Indiana police are searching for the personal persons responsible for tagging a church with graffiti and then apologizing in graffiti. It's very disappointing. Obviously, it happened because we spent too much time to get this place ready. Then to have it trashed like that is frustrating, said Pastor Mark Petty to Wish. Wish, I'm assuming, is...
I think it's the news service.
The news organisation.
News outlet.
Petty is the pastor of the Woodside Community Church. He told the news outlet that he's frustrated because volunteers just painted the walls a few months ago, and now they're ruined thanks to whoever marked up the walls with graffiti. However, he did say he found some humour in the situation because whoever marked up the walls with profanity and vulgar pictures realised it was a church and apologised. In graffiti. They wrote, "Sorry, we just realised this was a church." Benny said he forgives whoever did this. "We love them, and as a church, we'd love to have them come back and do the right thing. We would take them to our youth group." I'm not sure if that's a threat or not. 15 kids in the church's youth group.
sounds like a pretty tough sentence.
Yeah, 15 kids in the church's youth group helped clean up the mess in the building that Petty is having converted into a community centre to help kids stay out of trouble. Yes, well,
it's graffiti.
A little light story to end, I guess, there, Gavin. But, you know, it doesn't make it any holier just because you've done it on a graffitied on a church. People, don't graffiti. Don't be a loser in graffiti. Not that any of our listeners would be the people who are graffitas. I'm not sure what the word is.
Yeah, neither am I. It's it's an interesting approach. I mean, good on Mr. Petty
for reaching out.
Tom, was it?
Yeah.
Tom? No.
No, Tom.
but yeah, I mean, plenty of people do things they ought not, and we can spend our time chastising them.
But what value is there?
Yeah, and obviously with the youth centre that they're trying to help young people.
Yeah.
That, you know, and these are possibly young people who need help.
That's right. Maybe they could be the first customers of that. Yeah, no, I've never been a fan of people tagging stuff. I mean, someone of your class and upbringing, Anna, I'm sure it never even crossed your mind. But isn't it one of those things where it's funny how, I wonder how many generations it'll take before a tag is considered like the graffiti they find in the Roman Forum now, and they go, "Oh, that's an archaeological treasure." Probably a little bit of time for a bit of spray paint on a church, don't you think?
Banksy.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if... Maybe we shouldn't call that ancient stuff graffiti.
Well, that's a good point.
It's quite different, isn't it? But maybe, nevertheless, it's, putting something on a wall that's not your own.
It's a good point.
Oh, I mean, it's...
If we're not going to call that ancient stuff graffiti, then we probably shouldn't... Well, you're right. Maybe we just need a new term for it. Yeah.
Well, I think of the graffiti that, you know, the ancient stuff is like depicting like political or religious something, you know, like it's, they're trying to say something.
Right.
A lot of what is put out these days is just throwing spray paint on a wall.
Yeah, true.
And
writing your own name.
Or writing your name in a language that no one, or, you know, using letters that are some random, you know,
alphabet
that no one really knows, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like saying Anna was here, you know, like it's not necessarily saying anything about, if they were saying like political something or religious something, you know, like something of the day, then in 1,000 years, they're going to look back on it and go, "Oh, wow, see, that's interesting." But most of what, probably what was on the side of that church wasn't going to be anything to hold on to for a long time. But
I was having an interesting discussion with someone recently about, you know, the history of Catholic and Christian art. And obviously it's one filled with great masters, you know, Michelangelo and Raphael and all sorts of Caravaggio and other people. And they were talking about how, and I think this is true in most places, how Catholic and Christian art is, you know, it's been lost a little bit.
Yeah.
And there was a discussion about how one might resurrect that. Excuse the pun.
I don't know if I will excuse that pun. That was a pretty obvious one.
And one of the things I said, well, you know, is... Because surely there are people who do, you know, we think about rap as sort of a music genre, and you think, oh, well, they've got people like Father Stan Fortuna, right, who's a Catholic rapping priest. So are there Catholic graffiti artists out there who are actually creating things that are or can be or would be uplifting for people and spiritual? And I don't know if it is, if there are or not, but it's sort of a thing. Well, if this is an artistic expression, and when it is truly an artistic expression, as opposed to a, you know, "and I was here" sort of scenario, you know, is, should the church, if it's seeking to promote sort of a renewal amongst the arts, you know, do you say, well, graffiti, I mean, that's not really something we do, right? It's not really a church thing. We do sort of, you know, the Last Supper and, you know, and those sorts of things. So that was just, I hadn't sort of thought about it until we started discussing this. I found the story, it didn't spring to mind. And as we discussed it, that conversation came back to me. So,
oh, well, there you go. Well, I mean, maybe, I mean, I would like to think that previous episodes of the podcast are a bit more uplifting than graffiti. But the only way for you to find out, really, would be to go back and listen to them. True masterpieces. So you can do that by going to www.station15.co.nz. You can listen to all our back catalogue of episodes and shows. You can also subscribe there for free, or you can find us in iTunes or Google Play or your podcatcher of choice. Just search for The 15th Station. If you want to reach out to us, we always love to hear from you. You can send us an email to podcast@station15.co.nz. Or you can reach us at twitter.com/station15 or facebook.com/station15. Thanks very much, Anna. It's always lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for having me again.
Oh, my pleasure. And Gavin, always good to talk to you too, mate. I hope the month ahead is a good one for you, and even if it's just to cool off a bit in Australia, which probably means it drops to like 30 degrees or something. Oh, no. Canberra can get cold. They can get cold in Canberra.
Well, it's going to be below freezing tonight, so, chilly con carne.
Wrap up warm.
Yeah, will do. Have a good month, James.
Thanks, mate. Same to you. And to all of you out there, thanks very much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. And until next time, take care and God bless.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.